Board Game Geek podcast, where we geek out about board games, the mechanisms behind them, and the people who create them. I'm your host, Candace Harris, and I'm here today with Steph Hodge from BGG and all the meeples of the rainbow. How's it going today, Steph?
It's amazing because we get to talk and hang out, so I'm excited.
I know. We just got to talk and hang out and play some games together at BGG Con, which was really cool, but it's always great to talk to you.
Oh my God. We had so much fun at BGG Con. It was amazing.
So today we're going to be discussing the Board Game Geek Holiday Gift Guide and some of the games that we've included on it for 2022. And Steph is the perfect person to have co-hosting with me today because Steph plays a million board games every single year. And she is also who spearheads kind of creating the holiday gift guide. So I'm excited to talk about some different games that are on there. And yeah, but before we talk about the BGG gift guide games, Steph, I'd love to hear what you've been playing. So let's jump into Fresh Plays.
At BGGCon, back to that, I feel like we're going to be talking about some of these games on this podcast, but I had the privilege of learning Mosaic, a Story of Civilization from Aldi himself.
Cool.
BGG Aldi. And he's been so excited about this game. He ended up teaching it 3 times during the con, and I was fortunate to be one of those plays, and I fell in love with it right then and there. Last night, I had my second play of it as well. This game is designed by Glenn Drover, published by Forbidden Games, and plays 1 to 6 players. And if you're not familiar with it, it is a card drafting, engine building sim game. And I love sim games. So I was very excited to play this and get this to the table. It is a beast. The game is sprawling. Tons of cards. It's huge. However, the actual gameplay is fairly simplistic and straightforward, which is great. So if you're looking into it, don't be like thrown off by like, oh my God, it's too much for me. It's too big. Because it is not that challenging for a sim game, which is refreshing, if you will.
Yeah, I got the opportunity to demo Mosaic at Gen Con. And I played a 3-player game, and I was really impressed with how streamlined it is. And it's Glenn Drover, so he took that like Raccoon Tycoon formula of just quick turns. Like everything you do on your turn is pretty quick. And I love the card drafting, and just even at my 3-player demo game. I mean, we played for like an hour and a half or so, but even at that game, we didn't want to stop playing. It was very engaging and just. Really smooth once we got the hang of it. And it's nice to have a civilization building game that you can play in like 2 hours, right?
Exactly. We played last night in 90 minutes as a 2-player game. So that just goes to show it can go very quickly. Even with more players, the turns are so fast and you're working through these decks of cards that will trigger like empire scorings. And so once the third empire scoring is triggered, that will be the end of the game. But there are other ways where the game can end as well with achievements and everything. So, but what's really great about this game is how the card technologies work, because you're gaining these technologies, but it uses a tag system. So if you're familiar with games like Terraforming Mars, they have those tags on the top of the card. So you're collecting these different tags, which will give you better benefits and possible extra scoring at the end if you collect projects and stuff. So I love the use of the cards. It's very streamlined and it works incredibly well.
Cool. Yeah, this is one that I've been kind of looking forward to playing a full game of, and I was hoping to try to do it at BGG Con, but it never quite worked out because I was just playing a bunch of different games with other people.
Because you needed to hang out with Aldi because he was teaching.
I missed it. I'm gonna have to fly back to Dallas and get that teach.
Yes. No, it's just, it's such a fantastic game, and it will easily be one of the contenders for in my top of the year at the end of the year.
Ooh, awesome.
It's a wonderful game.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to playing that. But recently, I've had the opportunity to play a couple games of John Company's Second Edition, which is a new big Cole Whirly game from Whirly Gig Games. It plays with 1 to 6 players, and it's a negotiation and economic historical strategy game. Emphasis on the negotiation, because there are a lot of negotiations to be had in each game of this. But in John, I've never played John Company First Edition, by the way, but
okay, I was gonna ask.
Yeah, no, I haven't played the first edition. I own it, I have it in shrink, and it's just for me right now just a collector's item. Like, I'm a big fan of Cole Whirly, so I also have like PAX Premier First Edition, which I still haven't played, but I really want to, because I know, you know, it's a bit different from Second Edition. And yeah, I want to eventually play it, but either way, I want to own it. but in John Company, each player represents a British family in the 18th century. And we're all working for the British East India Company, which was originally established, I think, back in like 1600 to trade in India. And we're trying to use the company for our own personal gains. And this game, it's not about being the wealthiest at the end of the game, but it's all about where your family's reputation is. So each turn, you may get the opportunity to have some of your family members who are working for the company retire from their company positions, and then they'll get the, you know, opportunity to establish estates. But you do need money for that, because the fancier the estate, the more money you need to spend, but the more victory points you'll get. And this is a game where the most victory points wins. So it has multiple different scenarios, but I've only been playing the 17-10 scenario, which is 5 rounds. And so the game will end after 5 rounds, or should I say, the game will end after 5 rounds unless the company fails. Because throughout the game, we're keeping track of the company standing. And there are ways you can tank the company. And some people might want to do that. Some people might be incentivized to do that, while others aren't. So it just kind of, every game just kind of really feels different in this game. It's just one of the things I love about it. But each round is kind of, there's this procedural process where you have all these different phases that you play through, and the game board is so well designed that you just flow right through, and it has this kind of ribbon going around the border of the board, so it's easy to know what you're doing next. There are like some keywords, so once you know how to play the game, you barely need to check the rule book, which is really cool, because, you know, I always appreciate games, especially heavier games like this, where your head is not in the rule book, but it's actually on the board and you're engaging with other players. So anyway, so you go through like these different phases. Like there's a family phase where you could take 1 of 6 actions. You can kind of buy ships or luxuries or like a couple of these different types of enterprises, or you can enlist your family members into the military as officers or as clerks or writers into 3 different presidencies, which India is kind of divided into, Bombay, Madras, and Bengal. So everybody takes a family action each phase, and then, or for the family phase, shall I say. And then there's a hiring phase where if there were any positions, company positions that were vacated in the previous round, you'll rehire. And each card is awesome because it has on the back who makes the decision for hiring and also who's eligible to be hired. So, you know, everything is just like so well laid out on cards in the game board for this. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. But anyway, then you would hire. So every company position is filled. And then you go through, starting with the chairman, and everybody in the company who has an office position or is a manager of something goes and does their action. And they have a card in front of them and it tells them what they can do. Like if you're the manager of shipping, you can fit ships and build company ships into different parts of the ocean, which will be used to facilitate trade and help make money for the company. You can, like, if you are the head of the military affairs, you know, you get to put different officers into the different militaries for the three main regions of India. And then if you're the president, you can try to do trade. And so in this game, a lot of what you're doing when it's your turn to act as your company position, you are rolling dice to do success checks. And I know dice always scare a lot of people off, but in this game, I feel like it's a little different because number one, you pay a certain amount of money in most cases, £1 per die, and then you roll a certain amount of dice. So, you know, you're thinking about that when chairman is allocating money to the different presidencies. And this is, again, something you could negotiate. Like, hey, I'm the president of Bombay. We really want a lot of money, chairman. Could you, you know, if I give you one of my promise cards here, you know, could you give me like three extra pounds into my presidency treasury? You know, so everything is negotiable in this game, and it could take a bit to play because, you know, depending on how your group is and how much talking you're doing and everything like that. But back to the success checks. So let's say I had 4 pounds. I roll four dice. I spend 4 pounds. I get 4 dice. I roll the dice. And you're only concerned with the lowest die result in the whole pool of dice you roll. So a 1 or 2 is always a success. 3 or 4 usually means nothing happens. And if your lowest number is a 5 or 6, it's a catastrophic failure. Like you end all your actions and you're fired pretty much. So it ends up being really fun. Like there are lots of exciting moments. I'm somebody who doesn't mind dice rolling in a lot of different games because I like kind of the excitement of it. But anyway, so all the company positions act, they do stuff. There's an events phase where different activities are popping off in India. And you have to, the company has to deal with that. And then there's a political phase, which is awesome, where whoever's the prime minister will, you know, draw a card from the parliament deck, I think it's called. And it's a law. So then they read the law and then you have to decide if you want to pass or fail it. So, you know, people have votes. And that reminds me of kind of the political phase in Twilight Imperium. So, you know, without going on too much, this game is just, I've been loving it. I've played now 3 full games of it, and every game has played out completely differently because of the way you set up at the beginning. You know, everybody gets these cards to say what your starting positions and resources are, and that just, you know, that varies a lot. It's just really, really exciting. And like I said, everything is negotiable. So you have to be okay with negotiation games if you're going to play this. Have you ever played either John Company, Steph?
No, I just actually picked up the first edition because everybody's offloading it now that they're getting the second one. So that's why I was going to ask you if you're going to like tell me the differences. But if you don't know, you don't know.
Yeah, I do not know what the differences are. But from what I know, just some things were kind of streamlined a bit. And, you know, obviously, if you're making a second edition of a game, you're trying to improve some things. But, you know, there might be people out there who prefer the first edition, which is totally OK.
Yeah, there's always. Yeah. There is always. Someone.
Yeah.
I feel like if I'm going to try it, I might as well just pick up the first edition and see. I haven't really played a full-on negotiation game, so I'm not sure what I'll think.
I think it's a ton of fun because you can also kind of get into role playing a little bit with, you know, I always play green, so I'm the Walsh family, and you know, like the last time I played, I think the Larkins family, they were kind of like uppity and they came from money, and you know, depending on which group you play with, you kind of get into it. I mean, I would also say, like Cole Worley's designs in general are, you know, always unique and a little bit different feeling, which I really appreciate. And I will say too, this game definitely explores like themes of imperialism and globalization in the 18th and 19th centuries, and basically how those developments were felt like domestically. And that might not be something that everybody is down to explore in a game. But personally, like, I have been just loving exploring history through board games. And, you know, even like I can't remember if it was a one of Cole's designer diaries or what, but he recommended this book, which I picked up, called The Anarchy, The East India Company, Corporate Violence, and The Pillage of an Empire, by William Dalrymple. Yeah, William Dalrymple. And I haven't read the whole book, but I love how games kind of get me, someone who did not like enjoy history in high school or growing up, but now games are getting me into reading history and, you know, kind of like learning more about it. So anyways,
that is cool.
Yeah. So that is John Company's second edition. I'm really excited to kind of explore more of the other scenarios. Oh, I didn't even tell you about the blackmail cards that are in there, but
oh my goodness.
there's so much. So Steph and I both played Deal with the Devil recently at BGGCon.
Yes.
which is a new release, 2022 release from Matus Kautry. And it's published by Czech Games Edition. This is the designer who created Alchemist, which is, it's the same designer from Alchemist. So I figured instead of us both talking about two separate games, we could just kind of talk about our experiences with Deal with the Devil.
That makes sense. We had a great time. It was like almost the closing game for us, even though we did play another game later. Yeah. But like this was like the close, because we finished the game and everybody was gone.
Yeah, the Sunday afternoon of BGGCon, we cleared the room out. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this one is unique because you need exactly four players. Yeah. And it's balanced for four players. You can't, like, I could see an expansion with a fifth player, but you really need the four players. Like, because someone's a devil, someone's a cultist, and there are two humans. It's kind of also a trading game, so obviously you like this one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's got a mix of what I don't even know if I would call it a heavy euro, but it's more medium. I think
yeah, it's not challenging. It's just a lot of steps.
Yeah, it's a lot of steps, and some things are different because it's basically you're mixing kind of a hidden roles game with a medium weight euro game in a fresh way, which kind of can initially seem complicated and complex and heavy. But once we started playing, like after we finished our first round, we're like, oh, that's it? You know, and not in a bad way, but it seemed more intimidating than it was.
Yeah, based on the feedback going around the con and people are like, you know, struggling with the rules or whatever. We didn't really have any problems with the rules. So it's just more of the, I guess, game per game, maybe.
Yep. And basically thematically, all four players are like, we're rulers of four medieval kingdoms. So it's kind of got a fantasy theme. Like Steph said, two people are mortals. One is a cultist and one is the devil. And your goal is to have the most victory points to win the game. But depending on what your role is, you kind of gain victory points in slightly different ways. Like there are some common ways, like building buildings, give you victory points.
Right.
But the devil wants to get souls from the human players and the cultist player. So the two mortals have three pieces. They start the game with three pieces of their soul. And then the cultist starts the game with two pieces of their soul. And so the devil starts with
corrupted
no souls. Yeah. The devil starts with no pieces of soul. So the whole game, they are trying to But they start with a lot of money, whereas everybody else kind of starts poor in terms of resources and money. There's a phase in the game where you're doing deals and you're trading with these little cardboard chests that have, they kind of slide open. It's really clever. And there's an app.
Yeah, it's a good mechanic.
Yeah, and there's an app. So on the bottom of each cardboard chest that slides open, there's a QR code. And then there's an app you would need to download to play the game, because each chest is unique to the different four players. And it kind of lets you tell other players what you want. And then you can put some resources or money in to say what you're offering to someone. And then you kind of shuffle the chest, you scan them, and then the app will tell you, give this one to the yellow player, give this one to the green player, give this one to the red player. And also, I should mention, like, at the beginning of the game, you shuffle the chests and scan them, and the app assigns your roles and basically
randomly assigns
your roles. So you'll know at the start, like, oh, I'm the devil. And I was the devil for the first game.
Michael had you figured out,
I know.
So you kind of have to be sneaky, but like, I guess it was obvious to Michael because he saw what you offered at one point, and it basically had everything everybody else wanted for the round. So it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If that person wants this, and that person wants this, and that person wants this, then that leaves Candace.
You definitely, especially for your first game, this is definitely one where your first game is a learning game, because we were definitely kind of figuring out like what we should be doing and what we shouldn't reveal and should do. But yeah, like if you're the devil in this game, you start with, I think, 8 coins. And everybody else starts with like one or two, and there's a loan and interest.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, and there's a loan and interest system. So
I was in debt the whole game.
Yeah, which kind of made it obvious that you weren't the devil. But like, you know, when you get more experience with the game as the devil, you should take some loans to make people not realize you're rich.
Absolutely.
You know, there are things like that that you'll kind of pick up. But you basically play 5 rounds. There's a production phase. You get some resources, and there's a wheel that rotates every round. So each round, you're kind of getting a different set of resources and money. And that's just a quick phase. Everybody just does it simultaneously. And then there's a card phase. You get some building cards and an event card. And then there's the deals phase where you trade, you know, put stuff in the chest. And you can also signal to other players with what you're looking for, which I guess I gave everyone what they were looking for when I was the devil initially.
I didn't see that offering, but I also wouldn't necessarily in my first game have come to that conclusion. I would have been like, oh, that's a lot of stuff. Cool. I wouldn't have like looked around and been like, So Michael was on it. I was like, just trying to figure out what I was doing. I'm like, what am I building? Oh my God.
And then there's an actions phase where we're doing like kind of Euro game stuff. You can build buildings. You can hire, what were those, courtiers? I think they're called.
Oh yeah.
And that's kind of just for like a set collection thing with the tags on buildings where you're working to, you know, complete these achievements, which help increase your production, give you some victory points. So there's like a lot of kind of Eurogame stuff like that. Oh, and I should mention too, we draft cards. So each round when you get cards, you will keep 2, pass 2, either left or right, depending on the round.
I also want to mention that you will use every card every game.
Yeah.
So that is,
yes,
that is probably something to be expanded on in the future, Mike.
Yes. But it's also in the meantime, now, you know, as you kind of get familiar with the game, you know, I could see where it could get boring at some point, but it's, you know, everything that's out there, which could be helpful, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just there are a couple buildings that give automatic points. So I know Matt had one that gave 2 points for 3 rounds, so he got 6 points from that. And then Michael had the one that for 3 points for 2 rounds, and that's 6 points. I'm like, that was a huge advantage.
Yes.
Just And the building itself was worth 3 points. So that's like a 9 point. That was 9 of his 19 points.
Yeah, and so probably in the future, anybody who gets that in their starting hand, they're not going to pass that, those buildings.
Well, no. stuff that gives points, I would never pass on. Even if I wasn't going to build it, I would keep it.
But yeah, and then there are these event cards, which they have these like thematic events where you can choose to, if you want to play the event card, they're optional. You can play the good side or the bad side. And the bad side is like, you know, there's a reputation track and that keeps track of everybody's reputation. So you can lose reputation to like get some resources immediately, or you can spend resources to gain reputation. And after the interest phase, there's a reputation phase where we see who's got the highest reputation and they get some angel wings, and angel wings are good. And then you don't want devil wings. I learned that too. But then there are also these two special phases that only happen on occasional rounds in the game. There's a witch hunt and then there's an inquisition. And the witch hunt is where you guess, or where you make guesses at who you think the devil is, pretty much. And yep. Then the inquisition.
And yeah, these guys come around and knock on your door and be like, hey, are you, do you have your soul?
Yeah, pretty much. It's a soul check. It's a soul check. But anyway, I thought, you know, I think it's a game. I think it took us about three and a half hours as we were kind of fumbling through rules, like learning and playing for the first time. Yeah. But I think this game could be like two and a half hours when everybody knows how to play.
Yeah, I mean, you played it a second time, so did it go faster the second time?
I did play it a second time, and I wasn't the devil the second time, but I think it did go a little bit faster, but I still think with new players, it's kind of, you know, I had two new players and Matt played again. This time Matt was the devil, okay. But I had a really good time, and, you know, both the new players enjoyed it too. So this is definitely one I want to keep kind of playing a little bit more, especially I want to see how it feels when everybody knows how the game works. And then you can really kind of like lean right. into the social deduction part. Like, ooh, I got a chest that had XYZ in it. What does that mean? You know, I think Steph's the devil.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. I do think this game won't be for everybody, but I do think it is an experience game that people should try and see if they like.
Yeah, because it's very unique.
It's very unique. It's very unique. I love the way the app is used for the randomizing the chests. I like a lot of what's going on in this game. I am not good at lying and being, you know, if I had to be the devil, I would be like, oh my God, what do I do? But I cross that bridge when it comes, I suppose.
Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, great. And what we had someone there sitting at the table who had played it before helping us. Whitney, was it? Yes. Yeah. And that was really helpful because I, on my very first deal phase, I put way too much stuff in my chest to like offer for a soul. And I tapped him. I said, hey, can you check this out for me? And he's like, no. And he pointed to me to like take out about five things. And I was like, okay, cool. So there are things you're going to have to kind of learn while you're playing your first game. And then the second game.
Getting those early souls could be good for you, though. So, you know, it's one of those, where's the balance of trying to get that early soul? Because the more you can score for it, the better.
Yep. And it's also, again, a game that I thought, you know, when I got a rundown of it at Gen Con, I was like, wow, this sounds really interesting and hard. I was, you know, slightly intimidated by it. But then once we played it, it's like, oh, this is not that hard at all. I think it just takes that first game to kind of see what it's all about. And then I think it's quite well done and easy to get into after you've played a first game of it, I would say. But
absolutely.
Anyways, that is Deal with the Devil. Shall we talk about some holiday gift guide games?
I think that sounds wonderful.
Cool. Okay, so Steph, again, you play so many games, so you seem like the perfect candidate to kind of be the person on the BGG team who kicks off, you know, the BGG holiday gift guide each year. How long have we/you been doing this, and, you know, what is it all about for people who don't know?
Well, I know I have been doing it. I think this is the third or fourth one that I've done. I can't remember if I did it 4 years ago, but I know I've done the last two and this year's as well. I started it because other sites were doing it. I'm like, you know what? BGG should have a gift guide. It makes sense. Yep. And I can definitely run this thing because I've played enough to make recommendations.
So it usually starts with Steph bringing a list, and, like, you know, there are all these different categories.
Yeah. Originally I started it. I'm like, okay, some sites have just like top 10 games or stocking stuffers. So I'm like, let's just do a whole bunch of categories. And then I would make all these categories, and some years I have different categories. This year I added a couple and took out a couple from last year. So it's just a matter of what games I think are available and, you know, what I think people are looking for. So it's just a matter of that. And I write it all up, and then, you know, I have the BGG team take a look at it. And normally they don't change much, but Aldi always throws in one thematic game.
Yeah, I mean, you usually pick some winners from what we can all tell. So that's really cool. And I just want to add, like, even though this is called the Holiday Gift Guide, I don't even really think it's limited to the holidays. Like, if you're shopping for someone.
No, it's just any
time. Yeah, if you're shopping for, like, a birthday gift for someone, or one thing I like to do nowadays, if I get invited to a friend's for dinner, you know, instead of bringing, like, wine or pie or something like that, like, I'll bring a game to give them. Usually, like, something from my collection just to kind of pass on and help me cull my collection a little bit. But
I mean that's really sweet.
Yeah, like,
that's
I'm all about spreading the love of board games with other people. And, you know, I don't know. So I think a lot of the games on here are just great for all year round gifts. So
agreed.
And they're like, you have topics for modern classics where you have stuff like Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, there's co-op games, card games like Scout and Village Rails this year. And then there are thematic games, Rollin' Rights. Rollin' Rights have their own category now because there's so many Rollin' Rights and
they're
popular.
So many.
They're popular. And then you have, like, heavy games, games that are great for 5 and 6 players, which, you know, there are people that have bigger groups that need those recommendations, like what plays well at these player counts, you know?
And not just party games,
right?
For what it's worth in that
category. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Great non-party games for 5 to 6 players.
Yes, exactly.
And then there are, like, people like me and others out there who like playing solo games. So there are even, you know, solo games out there. And I would argue that solo games are a great gift idea for family members or friends who like doing puzzles, or, you know, you like that solitaire time by yourself, just, you know, racking your brain a little bit. Like, there are great solo games out there, would be great for people like that.
Absolutely.
But anyways, we picked a few categories off the list so we can kind of talk and just highlight some of the hookiness of some of this year's picks. So I guess we could start maybe with the family and new gamers list.
I mean, I feel like this is a great place to start because you're often, if you're buying gifts, then you might be buying gifts for people who aren't necessarily all the way into board games and are just learning or just getting into it. So these are great, like, games that are beautiful, have great production or whatever, and are just easy to play and are fun to play with any kind of gamer.
Yeah, and they also, you know, along with that accessibility, they also play in less than an hour. So, which is, again, another thing that's helpful for people to kind of get into modern board games. So, Splendor's on the list. Splendor is from 2014, and it's still a banger. It's designed by Marc Andre and published by Space Cowboys. And it's, like, to me, that was one of the early games that I got coming into the hobby. And, you know, the set collection is great. It has awesome components, and it's really addicting. Everybody I've ever shown it to has gotten hooked on it and just kind of like wants to play it all the time, especially, you know, my lighter gamer friends before I even had gamer friends were just, you know, just eating this up. So Splendor is always a good one, and it made it on the list this year.
And now there's a Marvel edition.
Yeah.
So if you want to get the Marvel edition,
there you go.
For example.
There you go. Whatever the person you're giving the gift to is into.
Exactly.
And then there's also Azul is on the list, which is 2017 Michael Kiesling and published by Next Move Games. You know, Azul is just another banger, just an awesome abstract strategy puzzle game that has great components that look like Starburst. Don't eat them. Do not eat them. But yeah, Azul is another.
Unless you use real Starburst in place of
draft and eat them. Draft and eat them. But yeah, Azul is That's just right. another game. I mean, and these are both games that didn't even come out this year. That are just like on their way to becoming classics at this point. But they're,
you had a couple. I would say they are in a way.
Yeah. And you had a couple 2022 releases on there too, right?
Yes. I added Yak, which is 2022.
It's so cute.
I'm really, I don't know if you've seen pictures, but if you haven't seen this game, it's like, yeah, it has amazingly adorable Yak figures, but it's designed by Michael Liu from Pencil Games. And this is another like simple set collection game where the production is just like over the top and awesome. You're collecting these bricks to try and, you're collecting these bricks to build a pyramid and try and get sets of the different colors in your pyramid, but you're using resources as the yaks go around to try and grab from their carts. It's super cute and it's very light and simple, and you're trying to, you know, fill goals and stuff. So I think people will really enjoy that one. The next one. Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, I saw that on at Gen Con on the tables, and it is just so cool looking. I just want to touch that
it is,
chunky pieces,
it's
right?
Super cool looking.
Chunky pieces.
Very chunky. Yes. The next one is Acropolis from Jules Massad, Jigamik. And this game, it blew me away. It's been blowing everybody away that's been playing it. I first played it in April, and it's a tile placement game, and you're just like building up a little city. I can't say it's like the most attractive game, but the way you're playing it is just, you're thinking constantly on how you can make your city bigger and better. It's just very simple, plays in like 20 minutes, and it's just, it's a nice tiling game. I would say it's a really a great way to introduce like other like tiling games. You're building up, you're building your own thing, so nobody's interacting with you that way, but you're drafting these tiles in a certain way that's where the interaction is. So, Michael wants that tile, I better take it. So, you can start thinking like that, but it's a light game, and it's nice. It's a great, it's
cool.
Great.
Yeah. I still have not tried that one, but I've heard nothing but great things. So,
yeah,
that's cool. And then Kites is on there, which is a 2022 release designed by Kevin Hamano and published by Floodgate Games. And Kites, I actually saw this one at Gen Con 2021 and thought it looked pretty neat. And I picked it up at Gen Con 2022. And it is a real-time cooperative game where you're playing kite cards and flipping sand timers that match the color of the kite card you're playing. And you have to keep all the sand timers going or else you lose the game. And it's just so fun, and it stresses me out a little bit in a good way every time I start playing it. Like when at Gen Con, I played with Amy and Maggie from Thinker Themer, and it was one of those games where we were about to call it a night, and we're like, oh, let's try Kites, and all of our hearts were racing. And I forget which one of them doesn't usually like cooperative games, but they both enjoyed it, had a blast. And this is one that I love because you can also travel. It travels well. I just throw those sand timers big baggie with the cards, and I can just take it with me and just break it out quickly and easily, you know, while you're waiting for your food at a restaurant or something like that.
So yeah, it's very quick. It's very nice. I've also played it with several different groups, and one group we've tried multiple times to win and we didn't win. The other group we played and we just boom, won. You know, it's like, so it totally is dependent on the group on how you do. But it has that, like you said, stress factor, but in a fun way. And it, you know, in 10 minutes, the game is over and you win or lose and you play again.
Yep.
And so it's
yep. And then there's Cascadia, which I've actually only played Cascadia once, and that's a 2021 release from Randy Flynn and Flat Out Games, and it was actually the 2022 Spiel des Jahres winner, but it's a puzzly kind of tile-laying game with a nature theme that's nice. I mean, you probably played it more than me, Steph, I would presume.
Oh, yeah, sure. I've played it several times. You are drafting both a animal tile and an animal, like an animal token with a little picture of an animal and a tile to add to your like ecosystem, I guess, your nature, terrain tiles. And you get to add this animal to a space that can hold it, but the animals will score in a certain way. And then also the terrain connections you have will score in a certain way. So you're thinking about two different ways of scoring as you're placing and drafting these tiles, which is nice. It's not too challenging. And, you know, it's a good, another good starting point for, this is a tiling game as well as Acropolis, but it's a different, I would say it's like a little step up from Acropolis. Acropolis is fairly more straightforward. This has multiple ways of scoring different animals and landscapes, but it's nice. It's elegant. It does what it wants to do and it does it well.
Yep. Hence the reason it won this Spiel des Jahres. It works.
I agree.
It works. And then in the stocking stuffers category, so these are smaller games that could fit in a stocking, but also I like to call them purse games because you could put them in your purse and take them anywhere. One of them on the list is Star Wars Jabba's Palace, a love letter game. And this is a 2022 release from Justin Kampanen and Todd McLish from Z-Man Games. I probably butchered those names. But it's basically, if you've ever played Love Letter, the card game, it's a Star Wars love letter game. And it has some different scoring objectives you can play with, but it's got cool characters from Star Wars. So if you're a Star Wars fan or you're looking for, or if you love a love letter fan, like this is a cool one to check out. It plays quickly and easily. You know, you draw a card on your turn. You have one card in your hand. Then you draw a card and then you play one of those cards and you're trying to kind of eliminate all the other players or, you know, achieve whatever the scoring objective it is. And it's just, it's a small game. That's just a great stocking stuffer, especially for the Star Wars fans out there.
Yeah, maybe we can get some gamers out of these, like, IP games.
Yeah, yeah. Bring them in any way we can, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's also Star Realms is on there, which is a 2014 release from Robert Doherty and Darwin Castle and Wise Wizard Games. So Star Realms is a two-player, quick-playing, outer space combat deck-building game. Again, this is another one. I think you could play Star Realms in about 20 to 30 minutes, you know? But it's, again, a small box with a lot of fun game in it.
I love recommending this one. I think it's fantastic. It also is available on the app, which I use a lot and highly recommend it in both forms. I think it's a really nice deck building game.
Yep, I totally agree.
So the next one on the list is Quix. Most people have heard of Quix at this point. It's from 2012. Stefan Benedorf. Newest edition, I guess, is Nuremberg. But it's also Game Right. So it was, the newest edition is Game Right, which is the one you can get nowadays, I guess. And so Quix is just an easy dice rolling, roll and write game. And you are trying to fill up the different rows. It's a simple roll and write game without too many rules. So I've brought it to almost every Christmas and we always play it and it's always a hit. So this is why I kind of consider it, you know, a great stocking stuffer because it's great for families and even non-gamers. And it's just, it's easy and it makes sense. So I feel like this should be a staple in most people's collection anyway. So.
Oh, cool. Well, I have never played it, actually.
You like the big, heavy stuff. It doesn't surprise me, but I do recommend it.
Okay, cool, cool. I'll have to check it out sometime. And then we have The Mind, of course. How could we not have The Mind on the list?
I love it. Yeah.
So it's a 2018 release from Wolfgang Warsch and published by one edition is published by Pandasaurus, and then I think the newest one is Nurnberger. But it's a cooperative game with a deck of cards that range from what, 1 to 100. I don't remember if there's a zero or not. And you get a hand of cards, and you're working with your team to play cards in ascending order without talking to each other. It's just a magical game. Every person I've gifted this to has just, you know, gotten hooked on it, just like I got hooked on it when I first discovered it. So I think, yeah, The Mind definitely is a great stocking stuffer game for this list.
Oh, yeah. Again, it's simple and it's co-op, so it's good because you're working together as a team to get something done. Again, really good for possibly non-gamers to, like, you know, just jump in and play because you just give them a hand of card. Let's just play, see what happens, and then it all makes sense by the end when you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you play again.
You learn from losing. and then the next three on the list, I have not played before, so I'll let you cover those.
Sure. Dandelions 2022 release, Takashi, oh my god, I'm so bad at names, I'm sorry, Saku, I don't know, from Board Game Tables. I know that much. And it is a game for 2 to 3 players. It's a quick dice game where you roll dice and you want to try and have your dice positioned on the different petals in a way that will score you points at the end of the game. So it's very light, but it's tactical. So it's a really beautiful little game in a small box.
Nice.
The one after that is Bag of Chips 2021, even though I think it was just released this year in the U.S. From Mathieu Albert Abut and Theo Revere from Mixlor and Blue Orange.
Yep, I think it is Blue Orange also.
In the States. Yep. So this game is a push your luck game, which I love because I always lose them, but it's just fun to push your luck anyway. And you have these little tokens that are kind of shaped like chips, and it comes in this bag. It's like actually like a chip bag, except it's better quality because it has to survive in as its quote unquote box, but it's a bag. And so you're pulling these chips out, and then you have this hand of cards, and as the game goes on, each time you pull more chips out, you're going to have to discard cards. You end up with two cards that will score possibly, and one card that will score negative or positive, depending on if the chips are out there. So, like, for example, if 7 yellow chips have come out and you have a card that scores for 7 yellow chips, you'll get the points on the card. But if it's in your discard pile and you're scoring negative points and there's 7 out there, you're going to get those negatively. And so you're discarding, you have 6 cards and 3 of them will possibly score for you. And so some of them are easier to score, some of them are harder to score. So do you go for the hard cards and hopefully, you know, the things come out? And so as you go, more chips will be pulled out. And so you can kind of gauge how it's going to go. It's just a load of fun. And I've had nothing but a blast playing it. And it's a very small game. And it will easily be fun for anybody, I think.
Awesome. Yeah, I've heard great things about this. I have not gotten a chance to play, but I think I have to pick this up. Because you're, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's super fun. I played it online with our stream, and it was everybody went and picked it up.
Cool. Bag of
it's
chips.
Cool. It's cool. The next one is Holiday Hijinks number 1, the Kringle Caper. I think they're up to 5. They've had the Holiday Hijinks series. This one is from 2020. Jonathan Chafer and Grand Gamers Guild. And so this is a new series. It's kind of like a exit game, but it's 18 cards, like a micro exit game. So you're working through these different puzzles. And so each one of these Holiday Hijinks has a theme. And this one is the Kringle Caper, obviously perfect for holidays, stocking stuffers. It's a very small game, but they have all these other ones, like the 4th of July has one. They just came out with a birthday one, so you can get it for birthdays. I know they're working on a wedding one, so like at weddings, you can have it on your wedding table and stuff. And so it's just these little tiny like exit games where you're figuring out the puzzles and you use this website to solve and figure out what you're doing. And they're not overly challenging. Everything makes sense. And so they have a rating of 1 to 3 difficulty. So if you're going for younger kids, you find a level 1 that can, you know, help,
cool,
you know, solve the cases, or more difficult, you can go with a level 3. But I've always had fun with all of the different ones. So this is the Holiday Hijinks series, and I really recommend them.
And then we also have kids games on the list too, which, you know, I'm often buying gifts for my nieces and nephew and, you know, my friends who have kids. So I have not played a lot of kids games. I think you play a handful,
right,
of them.
I play all range of games. So that's why I actually added kids games this year. I think it's important because if you're looking at a holiday guide, you're often trying to find games for family members or kids, you know, family games. So I think everything on this list would be great for this kind of situation. And I've played a bunch of really cool games this year that are in this category. So I felt like it would make sense to add this category.
Totally.
So the first one on the list, yeah, is Moonlight Castle from Haba Games, released 2021, Willifred Fort and Marie Fort. This has such a cool mechanic. And if I was a kid, I love it now. And if I was a kid, I would just be like blown away. The setup is you put these tiles into a castle, and this wizard is pushing tiles out of the castle. And so it's making like this river. And so you're trying to, it's a very simple set collection game to gain these gems to get these tiles. And, cool, and it's a really nice intro for kids for set collection, but you get this really cool mechanic of tiles like coming out of the
neat
castle. It's like so cool.
Neat.
Yes. They need to make that into a mechanic for like strategy gamers too. The next on my list is Yummy Yummy Monster Tummy from Lucky Duck Games 2021, Andreas Wilds. And this game is a cooperative game. It blew me away again. Lucky Duck always has these cool apps that you use. And this one works perfectly because the game is you're trying to match the color of the monster on the screen. And everybody has to throw in a card from their hand that has a color. So if you're looking for a blue, well, hopefully, you know, I have a greenish color or blue color. Maybe somebody else has a blue color. And we all have to like throw in these cards to feeding these monster to try and match his color. And so you're literally blending the color of cards in your hand with everybody else at the table. So one, it gives you really great like color theory because you're trying to make these colors appear on the screen and how close you can get it. You can play it on difficult mode, which is super hard. Even I, you know, it's like, it's really hard. And so the closer you get to matching the color, the more points you can score. And it's so much fun. Kids would freaking love this game. It's so good.
So that's Yummy Yummy Monster Tummy.
Yes, definitely check it out. The next one on the list is Clue Finding Nemo. Obviously, most people have played Clue at this time. It's no different, but it is a Finding Nemo themed Clue from the op.
Cool.
And most people are love Finding Nemo, so I would say that would be a good
gift. And a lot of people love Clue.
I mean, yes, I've been playing a lot of Clue recently, so it's been fun.
The only one on this list, on the kids list, that I've actually played is Quacks & Co. Quedlinburg Dash, which is a 2022 release from Wolfgang Warsch and Schmidt Spiel. And it's basically a children's version of Quacks of Quedlinburg. And you're pulling tokens, chips from your bag and trying to like move your little animal up a path, right? You're trying to get to the end of a path by bag building.
It's a ring.
And then like, what is the mechanic for busting? Is it like clouds or something
Yeah, I think it's the thought or something is like clouds. Yeah, something like
you're
like
you're getting distracted admitted, or yes. something from like looking at the clouds or something. I don't know. It was super cute, and that's one kid's game I played. And you know, Quacks of Quedlinburg is just such a great game. So it's awesome to have yes. a children's version for the younger ones.
Yes. Now, if your kid is already a gamer, it was funny because at BGGCon when I played it, there was a kid. He's like, why would I ever play this when I just play Quacks?
How old was he, do you think?
he was probably eight okay. or something, but it was just so funny. It was just, I thought it was super cute.
This
so
might if you're
getting a gift. Yes. So I just thought that was so funny. The next one on my list was Food Fighters. It's a two-player take that kind of food game where you're playing the veggies or the fruits and you're just going at it. So it's a little bit of dice rolling and you're flinging your food. So you're trying to take out the other side. It's super cute. And that's from Kids Table Board Game from 2015, wow. Josh Capel and Helena Capel. Yeah. And then the last one on this kids game list is Disney Happiest Day Game 2022 Prospero Hall of Funko Games. They have been knocking it out of the park over at Funko and just coming out with tons of games. They have a lot of Disney line games, but this one has a super cool board because it's the daytime and then it's the nighttime. Ooh. And so you're going, if you've just visited like a Disney World, this is like perfect because kids will remember the trip that they've had. So oh, cool. if you've gone or if they just love Disney in general, this, you know, it's just fun. It's super light. You have a spinner that you spin and collect balloons to move around the park. So yeah, it's nice.
Cool. And then over in the two player games category, first one on the list I have is Targi. Targi is a 2012 two-player worker placement game that works so well from Andreas Steger and Cosmos Games. And you basically have a 5x5 grid and you place your meeples on the borders of the grid. And you can never place a meeple in the same row or column where your opponent's meeple can see. So it has this real kind of like puzzly, interesting worker placement for a two-player game. You're collecting resources and then you're building this like tableau of tribal cards in your display. It is such a fantastic game. You know, it came out in 2012. 10 years later, it's still just super, super cool. So that's Targi.
Yeah, it's definitely for a gamer who likes two-player games. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily for somebody who's just getting into gaming, but not to say it's not either.
Right.
But it's a really cool game. Quarto is next from 1991. But
wow.
I just played it this year, and I was totally impressed from Giga Mick and Blaise Muller. It is a take on Connect Four, if you will, or like you're trying to get four in a row, but all the different shapes, these wooden shapes and pieces, they have a color, they have a certain shape or a height to it. So you're trying to connect one of these things in four. And so you're placing this and you're like, okay, did I set them up for success or am I setting myself up? So you're trying to think about how to place these things and you're not a particular color. You're just placing these pieces. You choose whatever piece you want and place it wherever you want. Also available on Board Game Arena, so you can try before you buy.
Cool. Quarto.
Yeah, the next one is T for Two, a 2020 release, Cedric Chabusit and Space Cowboys. This was really cool. It's a push your luck kind of Alice in Wonderland themed game with a little bit of set collection. You're just trying to collect all these different points. I thought it was really... It was whimsical and just fun, and so it was a hit for me. The next is It's a Wonderful Kingdom 2021, Frederick Girard from La Boîte de Joux. And I think it's available from Lucky Duck in the States now. And if you've played It's a Wonderful World, mm-hmm. you'll be familiar with the concept of what's happening in this game. But what they do is they change up the drafting mechanic a little bit. So it's almost like a I split, you choose mechanic. However, when you split, you know, if I split for Candace will take one side and the other side stays and she's going to have to add to that side. Then I choose for my turn.
Interesting.
So It's a really, really well done. I was very impressed, and there's different modules you can play with that as well. So fancy that it's both a keeper for me, this kingdom, and world is a keeper, because they are very different, but they offer a great gameplay. Next is Wolfwalkers: My Story. I think it's available on Amazon right now.
I haven't heard of this one.
Well, so it's one of the things where if you've seen Apple Plus movie Wolfwalkers, you might have heard of this game because you'll be looking for things related to it. Last year, Wolfwalkers came out as a movie on Apple TV, and it did very well. And it's a very, very well done animation.
Oh, cool.
I loved it. It's beautiful. And so I saw this as a game. I'm like, oh my God, I have to play it. So yeah, Michael didn't know the movie at all, but I introduced this game to him and he liked the gameplay. It's very simple. Card drafting, you're building up your tableau of cards to score points and collect symbols. It's fairly straightforward, but it's elegant and nice. And obviously, if you're a fan of the movie, this would be a great gift.
Awesome. And then The Mirroring of Mary King is on there, which is a really unique one from Jim Felly and Devious Weasel Games that came out in 2022. It's basically a duel game where one player is a mortal and the other is the ghost, but you're both Mary King. So one's living Mary King and ghost Mary King, and you're using control cards and power cards playing against each other, kind of exerts your influence on Mary King's psyche. So the Mary King has there's like a grid of tiles kind of that show Mary's face, and you can flip them over where you'll see part of her looks like she's alive, part of her looks like a ghost. And so you're kind of fighting back and forth to try to get her these tiles to show her in the form that you are, if you're the ghost player. So the theme is, you know, Jim Felly is the designer of Cosmic Frog, and he just comes up with these like really, really unique, odd games. So this one is a great two-player game, especially, again, if you're looking for something that has a different theme. Check this one out.
I'm glad that you played this. I think it's really a great, it's like an abstract game because you're trying to manage your cards and make the board in your way. So I was impressed by this one, and I've played it several times. Yep. So it's pretty cool.
And that is The Mirroring of Mary King.
The next on the list is Disney Sorcerer Arena, Epic Alliance Core Set from the OP that came out this year from designer Sean Fletcher. This is a great introduction into a battle arena type game. Everything is fairly straightforward, and you get to play your favorite Disney characters. So I think it works well. I don't know if you've played it, it's pretty cool.
No, I have not played that yet. There are a lot of the Disney games that I haven't really played. I'm not gaga for Disney.
That's fine. That's cool. Oh, I'm a Disney fanatic, so.
And I just wanted to throw out an honorable mention. We didn't put it on the list because we had Splendor on the list, but Splendor Duel is a new 2022 release that is for two players. It is a re-implementation of Splendor. Let's just say Splendor worked great as a two-player game, the original Splendor, but this Splendor Duel is so cool, and it's just really fresh and different and tense. And it's designed by Marc-Andre, who's, you know, the Splendor designer, with Bruno Cathala, and Space Cowboys published it. Pretty much what Bruno Cathala did for Seven Wonders Duel, you know, or took Seven Wonders into Seven Wonders Duel, he kind of did again here, where he took Splendor and created a special two-player version that is different. Still feels Splendory, but feels very different. So I think I played with Eric at Gen Con, and it was just really good. I can't believe I haven't picked up my own copy yet, but I'm definitely going to get that. So just wanted to throw out that honorable mention. And then I guess last category we could kind of talk about is mid-weight strategy games, because they're not too hard to get into if, you know, depending on where you're coming from as a gamer.
Yeah, so these would be great gifts for people who are already into gaming and, you know, maybe want to branch out and try something new or a little bit heavier than the normal, like Splendor and Castle Burgundy and stuff. So the first one on the list is First Rat. Came out this year. Gabriel Acello and Virginio Jolie. I'm sorry about the name. From Pegasus Feel. First Rat was described to me as a race game, and I don't like to say that it's a race game because I get turned off by that. I'm not big into racing mm-hmm. to the end, but there's ways to score points in this game. So you are getting points, I want to say. Now, there is a track where you are moving up your little mice, but you're a rat, and you're trying to get to the moon because it's made of cheese. So you're trying to build up your spaceship to get to the moon. And so you're going up this path, and you're doing all these different things, collecting resources and building up your ship. And so it's like super cute theme, and it's cool. There's a lot to do, and you can't do it all, so you have to plan wisely.
Yeah, Lincoln and Nikki really love this game too, and I, on their recommendation, I picked it up when I was at Spiel, and I haven't gotten a chance to play it, but I punched it, and I love all the components are great, like their cheese, little cardboard cheese tokens and everything. So I was trying to actually play this at BGG Con.
I know, yeah, you're trying to,
yeah,
play
but
it.
I haven't gotten it to the table yet, but soon I will. The next game on the list is Mosaic, A Story of Civilization, which Steph already told us about earlier. So we'll kind of skip past that one.
Just play it.
Just play it.
just love it. The next on the list we have is Corrosion 2021, Stefan Bauer and Deep Print Games and Capstone Games in the United States. And this is kind of a meaty game. There's a lot going on, but every turn is quick, and you have to do a lot of little things to make one big thing happen, which I think that's where the happiness comes, when you get to pull off the final, like the big thing you're going to do. And like, okay, all these things lead to one thing, and you know, then you do it again. And so it's a nice thinking, planning type of game that I like.
Cool. Yeah. I played Corrosion at BGG Con in 2021, and I remember, thinking it was okay. I think, I don't remember if there wasn't enough player interaction, or there was something that I walked away from that initial game, not super excited about it, but you know how you can have sometimes those experiences with your first game. So, yeah, I never got a chance to revisit it. But I know it did have some really cool mechanisms to it. So there was certain things I really liked about it. So that's cool.
Yeah, the card mechanic is nice in that one. And it's always hard to get a new interesting card mechanic.
Yes.
So.
The next on the list is Space Station Phoenix, which is a 2022 release from Rio Grande Games, designed by Gabriel J. Cohn. And it's a worker placement and resource management game that, instead of engine building, it's basically an engine deconstruction game. Because you start the game.
Yes.
I only played this once also. You start the game with kind of a well-oiled engine, and in order to get resource, is it like that special resource?
Metal.
You have to kind of trash parts of your
ships.
Yeah, to kind of, you're tearing down your engine to get other benefits. It was really neat. So I think this is definitely like a good one for the list. Have you played it a lot?
Yeah, so I played it 9 times. I played it a lot. And it works really well because, again, the turns are super quick. And you can actually play this on Board Game Arena as well. It keeps everything, you know, how Board Game Arena is very nice and that it does all of the income and stuff for you. So you don't have to, like, remember. But, yeah, you're basically killing your ships in order to build up your spaceship. Your space station, and you want to get alien workers and all these cool things that are happening. So turns are quick. You do a lot of things and you make this huge engine happen, and it's just satisfying.
Cool. Space Station Phoenix.
Yeah. Yes. Next is Foundations of Teo 2022 from Philip Glauex and Board and Dice. This one is actually not much compared to Teo, I would say. It's very different. It is polyomino placement, and you are using your workers to fill up the city of Teo and trying to get bonuses and all that. But as the game goes on, you lose actions. So you really, by the end, you only have a few actions to do. And you're like, oh, I need so many actions. So it plays out quickly and is a lot of fun.
Cool, cool. And just in case people don't know, Teo is Teotihuacan, one of Board and Dice's T games from, you know, a few years back. That's hard to pronounce.
Teotihuacan.
Speaking of Board and Dice T names that are hard to pronounce, Tiletum know how to pronounce it. Okay. Anyway, Tiletum is a 2022 release that's next on the list from Daniela Ticini and Simone Luciano, who are the two designers who created Zulkin and The Voyages of Marco Polo. And this is a game from Board and Dice that actually Steph taught me at Gen Con.
Yay!
And I crushed it in that first round.
Oh my God. Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't playing.
I had a good teacher. But yeah. I actually finally got the chance to play this last Friday night. I finally got to play it. And oh man, it's so cool. You know, it's kind of it's got like a classic Euro feel, but some fresh elements to it. And it's so competitive. It seems like you're racing for everything. So the theme is like everybody is, you know, merchants in Europe, blah, blah, blah.
It's not a great thematic game
at all. But on your turn, you're going to draft a die from around a wheel. And the dice are different colors that correspond to resources. And the number of the die is going to tell you how many resources of that particular type you get. And then what that number minus 7 is how many action points you're going to get. So if I pick up a 5 pink die, that means I'm getting 5 food, and whatever action that's associated with is going to give me 2 action points, 5 and 2, 7. Whereas if I pick up a 1 gray die, maybe I'm picking up 1 stone, but I'm getting 6 action points at whatever, you know, whatever action it's on. And this action wheel kind of like rotates each round of the game. Meanwhile, there's like a map that you're moving your architects and like a little merchant wagon around, and you're trying to position yourself to score things and pick up these tiles, because it's Tiletum. So there are lots of tiles in the game that you're putting on your own player board, and there's a whole like set collection thing going on there. But you're racing to kind of achieve these end of round goals. And one of the really cool things about the game is the end of round goals change every game, because you're randomly putting out what location they're going to be at and what it's kind of scoring. So each game could just play out like completely differently. I felt like every single round of the game, it was one of those games where everything I wanted to do, somebody else was doing. I'm like, no, don't take that die. Oh, you took it. Like, don't do this. Oh, you took it. Turn order is so important. If you don't have AP problems, I feel like you can play this game in like an hour and a half or something. Like,
it can
be pretty quick, but it's just, you know, these designers know what they're doing. Like, it's just such a smooth game. But I really do wish that it had a better theme. Because I'm like, imagine if there was just
Did you crush it?
No, I did not crush it. But
it all depends on the setup.
I was getting over a stomach bug, so I'll blame it on my tiredness and not feeling all that great. but I really did enjoy, you know, finally playing a full game of it. Again, I wish there was they thought about the theme a little bit and did something. I mean, there's still like so many cool themes you could probably try to integrate with what's going on in that game, and it just would have made it pop so much. I'm gonna like be brainstorming ideas and pitch them on a re-implementation in a couple years.
Oh, good. I like that idea. You should do that. It's great. It's definitely a contender for game of the year for me as well. It's
cool. And the last game is another game you showed me.
I know, it's so fun. I'm so glad we played this one too. It is Wonderland's War. Battle Quacks.
Pretty much Battle Quacks.
2023. Yeah. From Druid City Games, Tim Eisner, Ben Eisner, and Ian Moss. It is a fantastic chip bag building game with the Alice in Wonderland theme, which I super love. The amazing artwork, so amazing. Just production all around is just all amazing. There's a lot kind of going on, but once you get into it, it's not, it moves along quickly. So it can be a little bit daunting for new players to get into. But once you get there, or if you have somebody teaching that knows it, I think it would be fine, especially if you already love like Quacks of Quedlinburg. For me, this is a superior game just because I like pushing my luck and trying to see what other people are doing. I like the idea of a battle quacks competing for areas, but you don't know what you're going to pull from your bag. So hopefully you get what you want.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I love Quacks of Quedlinburg, and I've introduced a lot of newer gamers. And it's like, it's really easy to kind of get anybody into that game. But Wonderland's War is just so much more interesting to me. So I love that they kind of built upon that and made it a slightly meatier game. And the art and components, so nice, so cool. I love all the choices. I love pushing your luck. I love the draft. There's a tea party phase where, you know, you move your character. Oh, and we didn't even mention you have asymmetric abilities in this game.
Yes.
there's a lot of really cool stuff going on in Wonderland's War. But everybody's playing a different character, and you're kind of like leading a faction. Like, you could play Alice or the Cheshire Cat, or who else is on there?
The Queen.
Yeah, the queen
and the Mad Hatter.
Yeah. So and each of them have asymmetric abilities, and there's just a lot of stuff. So it kind of builds upon what Quacks of Quedlinburg introduced with the push your luck bag building element, and takes it to a different dimension by having combat, in the different regions around the board. And it's just such a cool board.
It just works so well.
So well, indeed. So well. Well, that is just, some of the games. We wanted to just highlight some of the games on the Holiday Gift Guide. This podcast episode would probably be about 5 hours if we went through all of the games in this much detail. But but you can check.
There's 121 games on the list for different categories and situations. Wow. So
you can find the BGG Holiday Gift Guide on Board Game Geek and check out games if you're looking for ideas to get people gifts, whether family, friends, kids, couples, whoever. And again, it doesn't need to just be holiday gifts. Giving someone a game for a gift is just awesome. I love getting games, except I just always get them for myself. anybody can get them for me. Anyways, awesome talking to you today, Steph. Looking forward to seeing you again soon and playing some more games. And I always love when you introduce new games to me, because it is awesome. You do play the most games than anybody I know. So you're the perfect person to kind of spearhead the BGG Holiday Gift Guide. So thanks for, doing what you do. And thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you so much, Candace, for having me on. I love talking games with you and playing games with you. So hopefully
ditto, soon. Ditto. You've been listening to the Board Game Geek Podcast, produced and edited by Candace Harris. Special thanks to Matt Fonda for editing and mixing our music. Be sure to visit us on the web at BoardGameGeek.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitch under BoardGameGeek. You can reach us by email at podcast@BoardGameGeek.com. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!